The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, this is Adam Fields, Midnight 27 Studios owner and creator of the comic book series Prowl. You are listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 395. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. My guest for this episode is a gentleman that I met just a few weeks ago when I went to PowerCon in downtown Columbus. I'm talking about Mr. Bill Murphy from Fresh Monkey Fiction. When I arrived at PowerCon, I was determined to find Bill and his table because I was tipped off to the fact that Bill was creating a new line of Eagle Force action figures. And for those of you that don't know what the heck Eagle Force is, I'm not going to take 20 minutes to explain it to you because it's a really interesting tale. I had a couple as I was a kid. They were small, actually die-cast action figures, and they had a military theme to them, and I'll leave that as that. You can go ahead and Google the rest of that, but he also had a bunch of other cool action figure lines that were right there, and so I wanted to talk to Bill on my recap of PowerCon, but he politely told me that his voice was about to give out, and he handed me his business card and said, "Can we do it later?" And I said, "Absolutely." So you're going to hear my conversation with Bill. We're obviously going to be talking about all of his toy lines from Eagle Force to Long Box Heroes to Naughty or Nice, and it's going to be a fun conversation. You're going to learn a lot because I certainly learned a lot about the production of independent toys. But before we get to that conversation, I need to thank, once again, World's Greatest Comics. I say it all the time. Episode in and episode out, I tell you all the time that World's Greatest Comics got you covered for your comic book fandom. They've got it all. Single issues, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. I mean, you want it, they have it. So you need to stop by the store if you're in the area. 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio is the street address. Or you can find them online. WGComics.com is their website. And their Facebook page is at WGComics. And once again, I cannot thank the fine folks of World's Greatest Comics. I can't thank them enough. I truly do appreciate their support throughout the years. And if you get the opportunity again, please stop by the store or support the store any way you can. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Mr. Bill Murphy. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening I have the privilege of speaking with Mr. Bill Murphy, the man behind Fresh Monkey Fiction. Bill, how you doing?
Hey, John, I'm doing pretty good.
Well, can you start us off by telling the listeners what your company, Fresh Monkey Fiction, is all about? What do you produce? How long have you been around? Stuff like that.
Yeah, so essentially we produce primarily action figure collectibles in various scales. We've been around for about 10 years. We originally started as, leveraging Kickstarter as a primary model to kind of help grow our business. And we began with a line called Amazing Heroes, and now have started to produce various lines. Including Amazing Heroes, Eagle Force, Long Box Heroes, Operation Monster Force, and other types of things. And so we're continuing to provide, like I said, action figures at various scales. We work really closely with our partner, Big Bad Toy Store, for distribution. But yeah, that's sort of our cup of tea at the moment.
I have to ask, because it is quite an unusual name, and where did you come up with the name Fresh Monkey Fiction from?
You know, it was something that something I went by in college and sort of just gone by since then. And so when I wanted to create a company, I was like, all right, you know, I wanted to do something that wasn't specific around toys. It could open up to other things. The fiction part is important to me, because you'll see with a lot of the toy lines that we develop that are our own IP, we try to bring a lot of story elements into what we do. It's really important that when we go to do a line that's, you know, something we're not licensing, that we bring in that type of element, versus like, hey, it's just nice to look at, but we also want to bring in some sort of story around it, some kind of lore. So the fiction part is important, even though we get referred to as Fresh Monkey a lot. But that's a big part also of sort of what we're doing.
You've used two terms that I have many questions about. So I'm going to kind of just start asking them, even though maybe in the flow of our conversation, it doesn't make sense. But I'm very curious about the idea of your intellectual property and how you go about working within the parameters of that. Because, you know, you hear stories of other individuals, no matter if they're toy makers or they're, you know, musicians or they're filmmakers or whatnot, that they run into sometimes some IP issues with a project. So let's start off first. How difficult is it to get an IP or the copyright go ahead for some figures that are not your own IP?
You know, it's challenging, right? A lot of people want to do, you know, action figures of known IPs, a lot of big corporations own those things. And we've primarily, for the stuff that we've gone after, have worked closely with a lot of comic book creators who still happen to own their IP and are interested in making toys. And so that's been been a little less challenging to navigate that landscape versus going to a larger licensing show or an expo or a studio. And then we've started to grow our own, which is the thing that we really want to continue to do more of, because that's the sandbox that we enjoy the most. Even though it's great to play in other people's sandboxes and bring some toys to life that, like with our Longbox Heroes line, that maybe we're not going to get made, and we're excited about that. We also like to make sure that we're, you know, looking at what the market might want. I'm a 80s kid, so I grew up in a world of IP that didn't exist before then. So grew up with He-Man, Transformers, G.I. Joe, et cetera, and still very much miss that world where you could jump in and find a new property that you could get behind. In a world where a majority of the companies are really focused on licensed IP, I think what we're finding now with some of the indie creators is that they're able to find a home for some of their, you know, their own ideas. And luckily for us, a lot of us, you know, I got the opportunity to meet at PowerCon, where a lot of those folks are there, and they're, you know, they're, luckily folks are coming and supporting that, which I think is fantastic.
Well, let's talk about a couple of your toy lines, because you just mentioned Longbox Heroes, which is comic book characters such as the Tick, Madman, the Goon, Grendel. I know there's a bunch of them. I'm probably forgetting four or five of them, but can you give a little maybe backstory as to how you ended up working with those creators? Could you tell the listeners a little bit about what to expect with that toy line?
Yeah, absolutely. So the germ of that toy line came from our partner in that line, Jason Geyer, is known as Toy Otter. You can find him on Instagram. He and I have known each other for a long time. Jason is a huge fan of the Superpowers toy line from Kenner back in the 80s. I equally am a fan of the Marvel Secret Wars line from the 80s, which is why one of our first lines, Amazing Heroes, sort of leveraged sort of that form factor. But Jason really loved Superpowers, and I liked it as well. And we were, you know, looking at sort of that form factor going, hey, it would be nice to do something sort of in this space. And I had made some connections already with some of the indie comic book people. And Jason was like, do you think we could try to expand this, you know, and make something out of this using that form factor with, you know, indie comics that maybe, you know, the big companies maybe are not going to focus on. So that was how that sort of started. And then it was a process of just starting to knock on doors. And like I said, I had built some strong relationships with a few more of the well-known indie toy folks, and they were able to help me open some doors. And there you go. And then luckily we were able to get interest from a lot of folks who still own their IP. And also, honestly, we're fans of toys. And I think that's a big thing of it too. You know, we're not selling these things in Walmart and Target. We're selling them to collectors. You'll notice our price points are a little higher, but we're not making hundreds of thousands of these things. And the good thing for a lot of the licenses we were able to get for that line is that the creators, they want to see cool stuff made of their stuff. And they know their fans do as well. So it's been a real joy to work with a lot of them.
Okay. Can you give a little summary about, you said your very first toy line, Amazing Heroes?
So yeah, Amazing Heroes started as, you know, I wanted to get into making toys, having been a huge fan of toys and action figures for a long time. I really wanted to do something, like I mentioned, within the form factor of Mattel Secret Wars, because that was probably my favorite toy line as a kid. And I saw an opportunity with Kickstarter, as that was becoming a thing, to go, okay, this might be potentially possible. So, you know, after doing a lot of research and meeting people at conventions and learning more about the toy business, I decided to give that a go. And it was something a little more simple. It was a 5-point articulated figure. And then with that line, I leaned very heavily into public domain heroes from the 1940s and 50s, something that I was familiar with being also a huge comic book fan, and also being able to have access to because they were public domain and they had some really, really fun designs. So I went that direction with that line. And then along that journey of trying to build that line, I met folks like Mike Alred, who is also a huge toy fan, and we were able to get Madman. I met the Captain Action guys. And so, you know, it just sort of grew from there. And that's sort of what really started the whole thing.
When your explanation there, you said something and it just made me jot down another note. How did you get involved in this business of toy making?
You know, it came. I don't come from the side of the business. I actually come from the movie making side.
Okay.
Visual effects is where I spent most of my career. But I was just a fan of toy stuff and always wanted to do my own. And really, from I started to customize myself, and I really could not figure out how to do it at the scale that I wanted, given some of the costs that are associated with production, which are not nothing. And then, like I said, the Kickstarter thing was happening at the time, and I was really interested to understand sort of how that platform could work for creators. And I decided, hey, I'm going to give this a shot. And I'm a big fan of Kickstarter in terms of the community that it builds. And I think that that's really also something that is, even though we've kind of moved away from the Kickstarter model, it's something that has sort of stuck with me in sort of building the community around fans for what you're doing. And also, like, you know, listening to feedback, getting feedback, putting things out there that you're like, hey, I'm going to maybe thinking about making this. What do you think? And that was sort of what came out of the Kickstarter experience, was sort of building that community.
Okay, let's talk about a few other of your toy lines. Let's talk about Operation Monster Force.
Oh, yeah. So that's been a collaboration with Big Bad Toy Store. They're a distributor online. Most folks know who they are. They were wanting to get into starting their own toy line, essentially. So they branded a thing called Big Bad Workshop, where they really want to start doing their own action figure production. I had gotten to know them very well from doing some distribution for some of my other products. And they reached out to me and said, hey, we'd like to do something here. Would you be interested in partnering? And so we had some concepts, always have tons of concepts brewing. And so this was one that I was working on with my creative partner, Sean. And we were like, okay, I think this could resonate. We were also looking to, I'd made a transition to start doing things more in the 1/12 scale with our Naughty or Nice line, and saw, you know, the community around that, and just said, you know, I think we want to make a transition here and start working sort of in 6-inch scale. And that property just sort of seemed right. There wasn't really a lot going on in the market there. And so we're like, I think there's a hole here we can fill. And it's turned out to be resonated with a lot of folks, which has been great.
Let's also kind of piggyback off there, because you're talking about, you know, something that's kind of got the same tone to it. Naughty or Nice, which is a Santa Claus kind of centered toy line, but it's got a little bit of an edge to it. Would I be correct in saying that?
Yeah, I mean, it does. So Arlen, who is the creator and sculptor of that line, who has worked with us on some other lines, and you'll notice in a lot of what I'm saying, we do a lot of collaborations with people, which is something I really enjoy. So I've got the pleasure to work with some really great creative folks and partners. And Arlen, somebody that helped us through our Eagle Force line and kind of came to us and said, hey, I've got this Santa Claus idea. And I was like, hey, let's make it happen. And he had some really great ideas on what that line would look like beyond just Santa Claus. And you can see it's grown into Nutcrackers, elves, different versions of Santa, like Pirate Santa, Zombie Santa, Cyborg Santa. And so it sort of grew from that. And a lot of it, like I said earlier, was, hey, there's not anybody doing anything in this space. Let's give it a go and see if we can make it work. And I think that is sort of where we start a lot of times with a lot of the things that we're doing. And then we have a model that is a sort of pseudo kickstarting model that we have with Big Bad Toy Store, where we will pre-list items and see if we get enough pre-orders to actually move these things in production. So that's something I want to emphasize too around the way we work, which is a little different from a lot of other companies, is where we will do pre-orders through Big Bad Toy Store and see, you know, what the audience wants. And if they don't want it, then we're probably not going to make it. But if we can get enough pre-orders there that makes sense for us in terms of our arrangement with Big Bad Toy Store, then we move a lot of these things into production. So it's really making sure again that we have this community and this fan base that really wants to support what we're doing. And if they don't, that's okay too, because we may come along with something, you know, the next month or the next quarter that they might be into.
And now, if you will, in my humble opinion, the crown jewel of your toy lines, Eagle Force. And Bill, if you'll give me a moment, I just want to let the listeners know that it was very, very ironic that, or not ironic, coincidental, that you happen to be at PowerCon with the Eagle Force lineup, because it was a topic of conversation just a mere couple weeks prior. My good friends at the Candair podcast had me on, and we talked about toy properties that should have their own movie, much like Barbie. And I had pitched, you know, that Eagle Force. I remember as a kid having a couple of them and playing, and it would be an easy script to write, because, you know, you have the good guys in, you know, Eagle Force, you had the bad guys, and it was Riot, correct? That was the...
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Yeah, Riot, and they would, you know, do battle, and I said it would be an easy one. So it was just so weird that when I received an actual text message from my good friend showing me your display, I was like, oh my goodness, now I may have to go down to PowerCon. So, but for those that don't know, what is Eagle Force?
Yeah, so Eagle Force was a line that debuted in the early 80s as a sort of precursor to G.I. Joe, but they were 3-inch metal die-cast figures. Sadly, that line didn't go past Wave 1. I think a lot of it had to do also with the fact that G.I. Joe came out around the same time, and there's a lot more play value with that line. I guess it was about 8-9 years ago, we were able to get Eagle Force and decided that, okay, I had some as a kid and really loved it, had almost a whole collection, although I'm still missing the Jeep. Anyway, but that's a different story. I was like, okay, what do we do with this now? And so I was looking to do a 4-inch line, wanted to do something more military because I'm definitely a huge G.I. Joe fan. It kind of spoke to that itch. And basically wanted to reinvent it. So we reinvented it. We did it in a way where we said, okay, if these characters existed in the 80s doing their thing, where would they be today? In sort of the mid 2000s. And so a lot of those characters aged up in real time, and we started to build a story around that. Like I said earlier, a lot of things that we do are very lore and story based. So we had these older Eagle Force characters who are now in their 80s, and building a new team of Eagle Force when Riot emerges. So we really dove into the the mythos and the story and expanded it versus saying, hey, we're just going to relaunch it and rebrand it. We really wanted to go back towards some of those original creations. We got in touch with the original folks who were working on the line and, you know, had a bunch of conversations with them around what they were feeling when they were doing the line and the different temperature of the 80s versus, you know, now and what that had to look like. And we were able to kind of relaunch it, and we did really well. Had a Kickstarter for that. We ran into some factory problems, unfortunately, so it took us a little time to recover from that. But we've been able to kind of build out the line, and we've taken that line as started out as a military line. It still is, but it's branched out into other subdivisions. So if you come by, if you came by the booth at PowerCon, you'd see some of the figures that looked like the 80s toys. They had the gold outfits, but then you'll see some more modern looking figures. And you also see some space and some superhero stuff. So we really started to build out the universe there around the core story. And that's in a nutshell sort of what Eagle Force has become now.
And even some of those action figures that you had on display were kind of, they were Easter eggs, I guess would be the best way to describe it, where there was some subtle homages to some characters.
Yeah, I mean, we've done some of that before where we've, you know, been influenced by other properties and done like, you know, what I would call like a tribute to some of these other characters that kind of sprinkle throughout the line. They end up doing actually, honestly, very well for us, even more so sometimes than some of the other characters, I think, because they again, they have a homage to another brand. And you know, we're an independent toy line, and so we kind of have a little bit more liberties than maybe if we were a larger Hasbro or a Mattel. So we sprinkle some of that stuff in the line for fun, and it's worked out really well from both a financial standpoint, but also just it's just a fun sandbox to play in.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Bill for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. If you need it, they probably got it. So stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you could check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address, and they're pretty active on the Facebook page, which is at WG Comics. Maybe the most challenging question that I have for you is because I'm intrigued to know. Can you walk us through the process for making a toy line? From maybe like the beginning of the process to the final product, is that going to be a very lengthy?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on what you're looking to do.
Okay.
There's certainly very much a process to making toys, from design to production and you know, everything from how I'm conceiving what I want to do to figuring out then how do I sculpt it, and do I sculpt it practically, do I sculpt it digitally, how do you then position the line in the market, how do you then potentially, you know, get the funding to make the line and then go into production overseas and then deliver and all that. So there's very much a how to make an action figure, you know, 101 in terms of just the steps. But then there's also the, like, what kind of toy do you want to make, right? That's a big thing, too. Mm-hmm. I actually had the privilege of doing a panel at Comic-Con this year with some other great folks. And one was Wandering Planet, and they did a Prisoner action figure. And then next to me was Brian Flynn at Super 7, and the way, you know, how he's grown his business over the last 20-plus years. So it's really about, like, really, what are you after, right? And people I found are after different things, which is also pretty great. Some people are after just, I want to make money, and that's okay too. Some people are out, I just want to make cool toys. Some people are like, oh my gosh, this IP was so special to me. I want to figure out how I can produce it in like a plastic form. So that's the beginning of it, right? Really is like, what are you after? Like, what do you want to create? Like I mentioned, my big thing is wanting to bring really cool stories and products into the world. And sometimes that means partnering with folks who have IP, so I can help do that. Sometimes it means creating our own. So that's really the first big step, is figuring out what do you want out of this. And there's a lot of different ways to go. And if you go to shows like PowerCon, you see a lot of different booths with folks like me who are doing that from their own journey, which is really exciting. Not everybody's journey is the same, which is pretty amazing. So there's that piece of it, and then there gets into the how do I make a figure? Well, you know, figure out what that part is and then do some designs and find a sculptor and go along the journey of getting a fan base, which is the biggest thing I will say too, when people go along with this on this journey, is find other people that are interested in the things that you're doing. Because at the end of the day, those people are going to support you. And the reality is, unless you have a lot of money and you want to do it yourself, and many people do, which is exciting, you need their support to come help you, give them something that they want, that you want as well. So it's really important, I feel, especially now with social media and all these things, that you really try to find what your passion is and then find others who want to maybe help you with that passion as well. So that, and again, that's the beginning of the whole entire thing. And, you know, we could probably talk for an hour about specifics on where did that go and what's the next part of the process.
You're absolutely right. That's why I felt a little bit, what's the word, guilty about asking that question, because I knew it's a very lengthy one and it wouldn't be very simple. It would be very complicated and variable, as you mentioned. It depends on what you are looking to do and what your influences are. And so I thank you for giving that that answer.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's maybe move and talk a little bit more about just you, Bill. What were your favorite toys growing up as a kid?
Again, coming from the 80s, I was a big fan of G.I. Joe, big fan of Star Wars, had some Eagle Force characters at the time. But, you know, I was not super into He-Man. I did have a few of those. I was not super into Transformers. But luckily for the 80s, there were a lot of toys to go around at that time. Mm-hmm. Probably the biggest one that influenced me was both Secret Wars, because it was something that was a known entity for me because I was a huge comic book fan and still am. And it was like the first time, like, oh, I can translate my love of this thing into something physical beyond just a comic book. Mm-hmm. And that was really like this, like, really like light bulb moment of joy that I was like, oh, I really get a lot of excitement around being able to be familiar with something and then having another thing of it that I can put on a shelf or play with at the time that I didn't really have before. And then on the G.I. Joe side of things, it was very much about, hey, I'm going to be introduced to this new thing. And this new thing does have the cartoon, the comics, the toys, and it is an ongoing story and it's an ongoing characters and you're living in this world and this universe. And so that, and again, very similar to how the comic book world also works. And so that those were things that really resonated with me as a kid. Yes, designs were cool. And this figure was better than that figure. I love this figure versus that figure. You know, like everyone, I love Snake Eyes, you know, all of those things. But like, it was really about sort of that universe that was getting built and the world that was sort of being constructed that I was very interested in playing in.
You mentioned the G.I. Joe comic book. Did you find the comic book to be more enjoyable, or did you find the cartoon to be more enjoyable?
Given my background of like just being a huge comic book nerd, the comic book was the way to go. I mean, I did enjoy the show and understood it was something different. I also got the opportunity to make a Larry Hama figure a few years ago, and I did that because of my love for G.I. Joe and what I think Larry did with the comic and the storytelling, which was amazing. And I was glad to get that opportunity. But yeah, definitely more in the comic book side of things, I think, on that front.
Yeah, it was just more, I hate to use this term, but it was more real in the comic book than the cartoon.
You can just tell a different story there, right? Like it's a different medium that I think allows for it more than animation does, or at least at that time. And you could be a little more, I would call the G.I. Joe comic book like mature, but you could definitely have more mature type stories there than you were going to be able to do on an afternoon cartoon.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you still have all of your toys?
Yeah, I have most of my stuff. My comic book collection, I did get rid of or pare down, bought a lot of trades, do a lot of digital stuff now in comics, mainly because it was a space issue because I needed to make more room for my toys. So yeah, I have all the toys that I kind of grew up with, and I've certainly filled a lot of holes over collecting for the last, you know, 30 years. But yeah, very much still have a lot of the stuff that I had when I was a kid.
So I got to ask, what's the one like prized possession that you have in your stash of toys from your childhood?
Well, I don't know. I can't, from my childhood, I still love those Secret Wars figures still to this day. And I rebought a few of them because some of them didn't survive, you know, the play What Secret Wars, there was a, for Secret Wars fans who know, there was a expansion of the line that only hit a few characters that only hit the European market. And as I got more into collecting as an adult, I was able to acquire those like three figures there that I never had when I was a kid. But I remember seeing them on the back of the package. I remember to this day walking into a Dillard's, and they had Secret Wars figures there, all of which I had. But on the back of the package, they showed these three characters, Electro, Constrictor, and Iceman. And I was like, I can't wait to find these. This is way before the internet or other things. You just had to luck into things in a store. Or if you went on vacation, if you went on vacation with the family, if you begged your parents to stop at a Toys R Us or a TGNY or any of those places back in the day, you were able to go in and see if you could find something. But I could never find, you know, these figures again, and the line eventually got canceled. But we didn't have the fandom that we did now. Maybe there was a toy magazine you could potentially find an article for, so you never knew what happened. And then I discovered much later in life that they actually did get made, but only in foreign markets. So I was able to snag those, and so that was like, okay, I finally completed the thing that I wanted, and that was like the first like of the complete collection that I was kind of going after.
Okay. Do you have any opinions on what you feel is an underappreciated toy? I mean, it may not be something that you collected, but maybe something that maybe a friend had that you're like, you know, this is not, because you've actually, if you asked me this question, I would have answered with your fandom, because I feel like the Secret Wars figures were very much underappreciated.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they definitely were, I feel, especially when you have like the Superpowers figures also coming out around the same time. And I was not a DC fan really at the time, so I had a few of them, but I was more into Marvel stuff. Underappreciated, that's a hard one. I don't know, I'd have to kind of think about it. Nothing off the top of my head. I'm sure if I give it a thought, I would probably be able to get there. But I certainly at the time, you know, really was into Eagle Force and was like, hey, what why didn't this thing go further than it did? I think a lot of these, you see a lot of these 80s properties with toy lines, they came out with one or two waves, and or they had plans for other things and didn't really happen. Sectars is a great example of that too, of a line that went a few waves and had some really great stuff planned. It never happened. But yeah, I'd have to probably think about it a little more.
Okay. Do you have any toy that you had that you don't have anymore? Do you have any regrets about getting rid of one of those toys? And if so, what was that toy that you gave up?
No, luckily, my parents never threw away anything. and it's funny enough, when I go back and visit them, I'll still find a box of old stuff that I didn't bring with me here to where I'm at or whatever. So I don't have any regrets of like, oh, I gave this up or I don't have it anymore, or that I had to part with it. I don't have much there. I think that if there's anything, I think there were a few lines that maybe I didn't get into as much as a kid. I wish sort of maybe I, you know, had whether financially reasons or I decided that I wanted to double down on this thing or that thing that I didn't really pick up on, that I think I probably would have enjoyed. Silverhawks being a big one that I was like, oh, I'm surprised I didn't own more of that when that came out. I luckily for me, I've never had to really like sell anything or get rid of it and have to look back and like, oh, I wish I had kept that.
I think for yours truly, real quick, I think Transformers would have fallen into that. I was not really, I had a few, but I wasn't mine was Star Wars and G.I. Joe and He-Man and then wrestling figures. I mean, because I'm a wrestling nerd. So yeah, so I know that I'm like, for an example, I don't know where the GoBots and Transformers went. So I think that my parents sold them in a yard sale. I'm probably pretty certain on that. So, but I don't really regret not having those. My biggest regret was, and I've decided to start filling in the holes, is I have only a few missing AWA wrestling figures. And so that's kind of maybe my regret, which is why I'm back trying to find them and trying to piece together the full collection.
Yeah. I got fortunate. There are certainly things that I collected that I didn't at the time have, like, you know, certain G.I. Joe characters or vehicles or other things that, even though I was collecting the line, were just out of reach, either couldn't find them or financially speaking, whatever, that I've since gone back and purchased as a collector. But yeah, I mean, I don't have anything that either went away or that I'm like, oh, you know, I wish I would have collected that as a kid, because I found the stuff that I really liked, and I was fortunate enough to get enough of the characters to really, you know, felt like I had a decent collection.
I have to ask, though, very rarely do G.I. Joe fans actually answer this question affirmatively. Did you have the USS flag?
I did not.
Same here.
I got one later.
Oh, did you? Okay.
I did buy one in my early collecting days that I still have. It's in a box. It's not box, but it's in a box. It was funny. I wanted that so bad, out of reach financially for my parents. And so my grandfather, who lived with us, actually built me one out of wood that actually floated in the lake down the street.
Wow.
So, yeah. And it didn't look exactly like it, but it was, you know, you could put the planes on it and stuff, and you could set, you know, could actually put it in the water. So, cause he knew I wanted it so bad, but it was just kind of out of reach for us financially. So he made me one out of wood, which was pretty cool. At the time I was like, oh, I really want the plastic one, but now I'm like, oh man, that was pretty cool of him to like do that.
That is so rad. Yeah. I'm blown away by that. That is just awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Like it was, you know, you could actually put it in the water. It was made as a boat, and it had the thing, and you could open it up and you could store your toys inside of it. You know, and it wasn't fancy. It wasn't really painted, you know, in any particular way, but it was the best you could do at the time. And he put a lot of time into it and made it, and it was pretty great. And it was large. It would be great to have that now. That is a thing that I did get. I guess going back to your earlier question, now that I think about it, is a thing that did get lost over time and probably got thrown away or whatever. And now looking back on it, I'm like, oh, I wish I would have, I don't know where I would have put it. you can take apart and store. But it would have been nice to like look at that now with different eyes than I did when I was, you know, probably, you know, 10 years old.
I had a friend who had the USS flag, and it literally took up like the corner of the rec room. They used to just throw a sheet on it when company would come over, you know, if people came downstairs.
I mean, it's like, I remember when I got mine at the time, my girlfriend was like, I put it together and she was like, where's this going to go? You know? And I was like, I don't know. But I needed to own it. So yeah.
All right. Maybe another challenging question for you, Bill. If you had the opportunity to work on any toy, all right, your dream project, so to speak, what would it be?
In terms of licensed properties, I think I would – I wafer back and forth to two things that are licensed. One is Big Trouble in Little China. The other one is Hanna-Barbera, like Johnny Quest era, that type of Hanna-Barbera stuff.
Okay.
Those are the kind of the two IPs that I'm like, okay, and they have done some toys of each of those, and I have a lot of them, but I think if I could do something in that space, I think I'd love to do something in that space. As far as known IP. Stuff that I'm, you know, non-known IP, I mean, I'm doing it already. So like that, the stuff that I kind of wanted to make, I'm making. So that's pretty fun. But as far as like known properties that are out there, those would be the two that I would love to play in that world. I think especially with the Hanna-Barbera stuff, there really hasn't, it's a gold mine of really great stuff that Warner's has not, for some reason, licensed or a toy company hasn't gone after. And I think there's a lot of really cool stuff in there that would make great action figures.
Okay, any future projects coming down the pike that you'd like the listeners to know about?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've got a couple of things that we announced at PowerCon. We're going to do 4-inch, 5-point articulation, naughty or nice figures, which we're pretty excited about. We have, I will say, we have a naughty or nice Halloween-themed line that we're going to be showing in October for pre-order. We'll follow that with another Christmas themed naughty or nice at the end of the year for pre-order. And we will be including some characters that have been asked for that are not Santa Claus. So I'll just throw that out there. People can speculate on what that might be. And then Monster Force will continue also into next year. And we also debuted a couple of different projects at PowerCon. One was Voyagers, which is more of a retro sci-fi themed line. That's going to start pre-ordering at the end of the year. And then we're working with Arlen who again is the co-creator of our Naughty or Nice line, on a couple of projects called Zombified and some other things as well. So those are the kind of things that are kind of coming out for folks that also, I get this question asked a lot, like, are you abandoning 4-inch scale for 6-inch? The answer is no. We have a lot of 4-inch figures that we pre-ordered a year and a half ago that we have been, you know, we've finally gotten tooled and are in production and now, and will deliver hopefully, you know, they're starting to deliver to Big Bad Toy Store now, and those will continue through early next year. So it's, you know, the 4-inch scale isn't going anywhere. We're still going to do stuff in that form factor too.
All right. Let's let folks know where they can follow you online. Maybe get those retail partners information, website, all that stuff, Bill, as we start to wrap up our conversation.
Yeah. You can find everything you need to know at freshmonkeyfiction.com. There's links down there to our social media. We post primarily on Instagram and Facebook. On Facebook, we actually do have a Facebook group that you can join. That's really fun. We also like throw early reveals there because it's a closed group. And so sometimes we'll throw things up there a week before to before we announce them. Most of our products are that we sell are exclusively distributed by BigBadToyStore.com. If you go there and search for Fresh Monkey Fiction, you can find out the different lines that we produce, but they're our primary partner for distribution. We do offer some things on our website as well.
All right. Bill, thank you so very much for sitting down and chatting with me. I really have appreciated it. It's been a fun conversation talking about toys.
Hey, man, thanks so much for, you know, asking me to come on. I really appreciate it. You had some great questions. Thank you so much.
Well, you're quite welcome. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I will be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Bill Murphy from Fresh Monkey Fiction. Definitely check out what Bill's got going on. He's got some really cool action figure lines. He's got some things in the works that you might be interested in. So again, freshmonkeyfiction.com is the web address. So keep tabs on Bill. And with that, I must start wrapping things up. And I hope you enjoyed this episode because I'm going to be honest, I really enjoyed making it. Maybe you have an opinion you'd wish to share or a comment that you wish to make about this episode or any episode for that matter. Let me tell you where you could do that. First, you can shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. You can also find me on Twitter or X or whatever it's called this week. Just simply look for the handle of @PVDMVP. And you can leave me a message over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Just look for @PVDcast. Maybe you need to let some folks know where they can hear this great podcast. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that as well. First, it's available at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly. It's also available through all of those major podcasting outlets and apps. All you have to do is go to the search bar in your favorite app, type in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, John Orlando, and you should find it. And if you are listening through one of those outlets or apps, make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm, and subscribing means you never miss an episode of the PVD cast. But there are two other ways in which you can hear this fine podcast. First, every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a live Facebook broadcast through the Facebook page. And if that's not easy enough for you, there's one final way to hear the PVD cast, and that's through CROC Radio, Croc Radio out of British Columbia. They've picked up the PVD cast and are airing it. So if you're a fan of internet radio stations, then you need to seek out Croc Radio and listen to the PVD cast and actually all the great shows on that network. And I want to thank, of course, Croc Radio for adding me to the mix, so to speak. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you once again for checking out the episode. And I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. following has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2023.